This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today, Congress returns from the weekend facing the same business that it did last Monday and the Monday before that, energy and Medicare primarily. There has been some progress reported over the weekend on these important pieces of legislation, but not due to compromise across party lines. Congress may not be gridlocked, but the level of partisan rancor has rarely been higher. Take judicial appointments. Frustrated Democrats are blocking several nominations with filibusters last week. Republicans retaliated with a 30-hour-long debate designed, many think, to embarrass the opposition. Toward the end of the marathon, Senator Tom Harkin, the Democrat from Iowa, took the floor.
Republicans just want to make up the rules as they go. Change them to fit the times and circumstances. And change your arguments. Sanctimonious hypocrisy. Partisan politics, double standards.
His colleague, Senator Don Nichols of Oklahoma, fired back from across the aisle.
It is not right to be coming down and mentioning senators by name and use words like sanctimonious hypocrisy and impugning a senator's motives. That's in violation of the rules. People ought to know the rules. And maybe if we would abide by the rules, we'd have a higher level of debate, greater civility, and maybe greater understanding of some of the challenges that we have before us today.
Later this hour, a guided tour to the many pleasures of Arnold Schwarzenegger's new hometown, Sacramento, California. Did you know it has the biggest Hummer dealership in the world? But first, the politics of anger. We'll talk about the tone on Capitol Hill and how it affects the business of government and ask whether a closely and bitterly divided Congress doesn't simply reflect the political divisions in the country at large. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN@NPR.org. And we're going to begin with NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving, who's with us here in Studio 3A. As always, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Neil.
As mentioned, everybody always points back to the Civil War when congressmen attacked each other on the floor of the United States Senate with canes. It's been bad before. Is this, though, as bad as you have seen it in your lifetime?
Well, in my lifetime and in the 20 years I've been in Washington, I would say that it has reached a pitch, or, if you will, a tenor that is different. It's certainly not new for there to be some members of Congress who are at odds with each other. There have always been hot-headed members of Congress. There have always been those who are highly partisan and like to fight. But what seems to be different is that so much of what goes on is about that kind of partisanship, and so much time is devoted just to discussing the subject of civility.
Give me a for instance.
Well, this 30-hour debate last week was really largely about showcasing the mood and tenor and tone of the Senate, and talking not only about the judges. Of course, they were talking about four particular judgeships that have been held up by filibusters by the Democrats, but they were also talking about the mutual non-admiration of the Republicans and the Democrats, both sides accusing the others of having lost the old comity, and that used to be spelled C-O-M-I-T-Y, and losing the old sense of comradely cooperation in that body and giving it up for the pursuit of selfish partisan political ends.
When did this start to change, do you think? How long does this go back?
I guess in some respects, and I'm going to take kind of a longer view of this, I would say it goes back to approximately the Watergate period of time.
30 years ago.
Yes, that the time when Richard Nixon was ousted, essentially, by a Democratic Congress, which, on the basis of his Watergate crimes, which were pardoned by his successor, that he should leave office. At that time, then there was a subsequent election in which the Democrats picked up 49 seats in the House after that near impeachment that forced the president out. And a lot of people came to office who were younger, who were more firebrands, who were products of the Vietnam War era, and who wanted to push Congress forward as a more confrontationally agenda-pursuing political body from the Democratic side. And we got an election where there was, of course, a lot of back and forth I'll cross that battleground for the next 20 years. We got an election in 1994, which brought in 52 new Republicans, brought the majority control over to the Republicans for the first time in 40 years, and was, in a sense, a kind of 20-year later echo of that 1974 election. And that group has also been interested in pushing a much more ideological agenda than their predecessors had ever dared or ever dreamed they could push.
At the same time, would you agree that the political parties themselves, they used to, both the Republicans and the Democrats used to have, you know, what they call the big tent, and both of them seem to be enforcing ideological litmus tests a lot more than they used to?
Yes, both of the parties tend to insist more on ideological purity, and you do see people voting more with the party than they used to. The Democrats, for example, used to practically have two parties in Congress, the Northern Democrats and the Southern Democrats, and they were quite different.
Now, what has that resulted in terms of the culture on Capitol Hill today?
Well, there's another factor in this that is a very big part of the culture, and that is that members of Congress used to move here for the congressional session year, bring their families with them, put them in school here, and socialize with other members of Congress. They used to drink together. Some of them used to drink together quite a large amount, and this contributed to a somewhat different sociological culture among them. They had a bond among the members. Also, many of them had been in the military and had a lot of shared experiences. They had come to politics in somewhat similar ways and represented similar social classes back home. Much of that is broken down as Congress has become more diverse and as fewer members have served in the military, and most importantly, as fewer and fewer members literally move here and become part of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, put their kids in school. They don't spend much time together except when they're on the floor or in committee and at each other's throats. And that influences the relationship that they have with each other and takes a lot of the humanity out of it, a lot of the comradeliness out of it, and the friendship out of it, and makes them more opponents all the time.
And what's wrong with that? I mean, we keep hearing, pay-ins to, the old civility. But if there's partisan sniping, people have strongly held beliefs, they stand up for them. So what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it, I suspect, is that it leads to more bitter relationships, more bitter fruit, more legislation that reflects the conflicts between people rather than the areas of agreement, and makes consensus extremely difficult to reach. Democracy depends on some degree of consensus, some degree of compromise, and if it can't be reached, then what we're going to get is going to be a poorer and poorer public product.
Does the fact that the Congress is so closely divided, yes, Republicans control the White House and both houses of Congress, but by narrow margins in the Senate and the House of Representatives, does the closeness of the division affect this, do you think?
Yes, because it empowers and emboldens the minority. The Democrats feel that they're so close to being in power and they have so many votes shy of the majority that if they can pull over one or two Republicans on a given issue, they can prevail. So they're always feisty. They always have the eye out to prevail, whereas if the numbers were more lopsided, they would be forced into a more quiescent kind of minority behavior.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@npr.org. And let's go to, we're trying to get to Michael, who's in Watertown, Massachusetts.
Yes, hello. I'd like to make two very quick points. The first is that each side is very afraid that the other, with a very slim majority, in this case now Democrats are more afraid, each side is afraid that the other side, without very much of a majority, will nonetheless attempt to go very extremely in their own direction. And I'm wondering if there are any sort of countervailing forces to that, any attempt at moderation. And a related note, that the Republicans, through 30 years or so of being in the minority, and now the Democrats for about nine years, may have the problem of the corruption of weakness, that for 30 years a Republican could be as extreme as he wanted, and he knew that there would be a Democratic majority to sort of revert him to the middle, and in the meantime he could make his point and, you know, get favor with voters back home.
Ron, what do you think?
Well, with respect to that latter point, there do seem to be an awful lot of members today, despite the close margins, who do seem to be attempting always to show that they are the most, or more Catholic than the Pope, if you will, that they're the most conservative or the most liberal member. And some of that, I think, is the result of extremely effective computer-driven redistricting. because back in their home state, their district is being made safer and safer for their party, whichever party it is. And it may be a matter of the dominant party in their state wanting to push all the Democrats or all the Republicans into the smallest number of districts possible. It may be a matter of trying to reach some other kind of goal that the redistricting powers in the legislature had. But they're creating districts in which one party or the other almost can't lose. So the way that you survive then politically back home is to make sure you never get a primary opponent. So you make yourself the best, most conservative Republican or the most liberal Democrat you possibly can, and make sure that that's the kind of soundbite the people back home are hearing from you.
Looking ahead to the primary rather than the general.
That's correct. The primary would be the point where you would have any chance of being defeated, and very, very few members are defeated in either the primary or in the general election.
Michael, thanks very much.
Sure.
Joining us now here in Studio 3A is Andy Cohut. He's director of the Pew Center for the People and the Press. Pew recently released the results of the fourth major survey on the political landscape. Andy, always good to have you on the program.
Happy to be here, Neil.
And the close divisions in Congress, according to your survey, reflect the close divisions in the American public.
It's still a 50-50 country in terms of party affiliation and partisan alignment. It's actually a one-third Republican, one-third Democrat, and one-third Independent. The Republicans have had some gains since 4 years ago because of President Bush's popularity over much of the time, because this is a time that's where foreign policy concerns are greater than it was 4 years ago, and that helps the Republicans. But in the end, it's 50-50. And, you know, we could have entitled our report Still 50-50, But More So, because we have been asking a series of questions to measure basic political beliefs on a whole range of questions, foreign policy, domestic agenda, freedom of expression, power of government, since 1987. And this year, we found the greatest average differences between Republicans and Democrats over the course of all of those years, even greater than 1994. Which was a time when the partisanship was very, very high and Republicans took control of the Congress. But this time, it's not just Republicans expressing strong feelings. It's both Democrats and Republicans. And things are different than they were 4 years ago.
Would it be fair to say that the anger you sometimes see on Capitol Hill is also reflected in the body politic?
Well, I don't think there's as much anger among the people as generally as there is here on the Hill. But what we see is that the big issues, the big things that have happened since 1999, consider them, the election overcount, the 911 attacks, the biggest business scam, one of the biggest business scandals in history, have created really gulfs and differences in opinion about how to deal with these issues, from terrorism to the domestic agenda to how to deal with business.
And the effect of all of these has been?
The effect of all of these things is to make the Democrats feel particularly bad about their leadership. Democrats have been telling us pretty consistently over the past couple of years that their leaders aren't standing up for them. And they're taking a much more liberal point of view. And
this is sort of the Howard Dean effect without his name being mentioned.
He's tapping into some of that. Yes, he is. And the Republicans, on the other hand, are taking a very strong position on foreign policy and terrorism. And we have huge differences. This could be a real, if the people had their way, this could be a real Donnybrook on the issues if the presidential candidates choose to talk to them, because people want to hear about them.
What factors determine which party we align with?
Probably still it's how one feels about government, how one feels about business, but certainly foreign policy is a big issue. We're no longer in a period where it's just the economy stupid. It's both peace and prosperity. And the differences are huge on the questions of the day. For example, on the issue of preemption, is preemptive war, preventive war, ever justified? Among Republicans, 82% say yes. Among Democrats, 52% say yes. Among holding citizens without a trial, suspected of terrorism, 72% of Republicans say yes, 46% of Democrats agree. These are big differences.
We'll talk more about them when we come back after a short break. If you'd like to join us, the number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the increased partisanship on Capitol Hill, whether it reflects diminished civil discourse around the country. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. According to a new poll, the U.S. is still a 50-50 nation. Are you able to still have civil conversations with your political opposites? Call and join the conversation. Our guests are Washington editor, Ron Elving, who's here in Studio 3A. Also with us in the studio is Andy Kohut, director of that Pew poll we were just talking about. And we're going to get some listeners involved. Let's go right to Tom, who's with us in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to elaborate on what your guests mentioned on where this all started with Nixon and Watergate. But actually, what really ratcheted this up, it looks like, in 94, when the Republican Congress came in with Newt Gingrich, he credited Rush Limbaugh and this AM proliferation of right-wing radio that is really just part of the big reason. And, of course, the 2000 election didn't help. But, I mean, ever since the AM radio with all this right-wing shout matches, I guess you would call them, and then their constant onslaught against the New Deal, FDR's New Deal, and Reagan started that with going after the labor unions. But mainly this right-wing talk radio, I think, has ratcheted up the whole debate.
Andy Cohen, I wonder, have you been able to measure anything like that?
It certainly has energized the Republicans and given them an advantage in terms of getting the base going when something's happening. The Democrats don't have the equivalent of that. I think there's a great hope among Democrats that they could get it, and they're critical of it, but they wish they could have something that could rally the committed the way the Republicans have, the Limbaughs and the others of that ilk.
Ron Elving, the echo chamber effect that I think Tom is talking about has certainly influenced politics. Why is it? I mean, I guess the partisan divide that we're talking about. I mean, you can find dedicated liberals who swear that the Republicans control the media, and you can find dedicated Republicans who swear the media is elitist Democrats.
Well, and perhaps the media that offend each of those two groups could be in some degree described in those terms, at least by those people. I mean, when they made Rush Limbaugh an honorary member of the 1994 Republican freshman class in Congress, they were acknowledging something of a debt. I think that's right. And I think Democrats are talking now about trying to match that through email. And they have had a certain amount of success on the Internet at organizing people, and certainly certainly Howard Dean has had a certain amount of success at organizing people through the Internet. But again, there's a sense of reaction and then counter-reaction. There is a vicious cycle, if you will, or a cycle of revenge here, because for a lot of conservatives, talk radio was a godsend because they felt that the big networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, had all gone so far left in their description of the news in the 60s and the 70s with respect to Vietnam and Watergate and some of the actions in Congress, that they just had no place to repair. They had no place they could go to get the news, and to a large degree, angry talk radio of a conservative nature was a reaction to that.
Neil, I want to just add something for balance here. For all of the Republicans going in their corner and the Democrats going in their corner, the public still remains committed to compromise. Most people say they still want political leaders who compromise. They don't want to see the government shut down. They want to see their point of view expressed, and they want to make sure it gets as full an airing as the other guy's point of view, mm-hmm, or the other woman's point of view. But there is still a pressure on the part of the public to see the government do its thing, achieve things, and the public still looks fondly upon leaders who can get along with people of the opposing view. So I don't want to paint it completely as the American voters on the warpath. They are on the warpath to a greater degree, but within reasonable bounds.
Mm-hmm. Tom, thanks very much.
Yeah,
let's go with Doug, and Doug's in Corvallis, Oregon.
This is a very interesting discussion. Thank you very much. I was appalled watching some of the Republican, 30-hour Republican, whatever you want to call it, in the Senate.
The debate on judicial appointees.
But. Well, I don't know that I'd call it a debate.
Well, I was just trying to identify it for listeners who may have joined
yes,
us late. So
thank you. Senator Santorum basically was shouting and saying, we're going to get even with you, Democrats. You just wait. We'll get even. And I just heard someone mention a cycle of revenge. It feels to me, I have just this horribly uneasy feeling that this is a kind of a civil war where the weapons are words and political power. And I think an awful lot of Americans are uneasy with this. And I think some of the polls, not the one that's represented here on the program today, are fueling this fire by an unease by slanting the way Americans feel. Now, some Americans, I think a lot of American citizens do want compromise, but perhaps we don't hear from them. How long are we going to have to be in this really very uneasy state, and how are we going to get out of it?
Good questions. Andy, you just poll the people. You don't come up with solutions, do you?
No, we're not in the solutions business, but it's clear that, you know, we've been through an extraordinary series of events, and it's not unreasonable to expect that the American public would have differing views about how to cope with all of the things that have come at us over the past 4 years. And I think that's always a consequence of dealing with tough problems. There are going to be different approaches. And also, you know, President Bush has been a polarizing figure. As much as President Clinton was 4 years ago, we have the same number of strong party supporters for Bush and strong members of the opposing party critical of Bush as we had for Clinton 4 years ago. So we have had two presidents back to back who have great loyalists within their own party and great antagonists from the other party. And this hasn't helped either then or now.
Doug, thank you very much. I think you're asking the right questions.
So it would, just if I may comment, so mm-hmm. it may just take a person, a man or woman, a leader, to help us get out of this.
Well, you can not overlook the impact of events also. You know, clearly the nation came together for at least a short period of time after 9/11. Something, who knows what could possibly happen in the future, but outside events can certainly transform things.
Certainly. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, Doug. And Andy Kohut, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Andy Kohut is, where's your little piece of paper? He's the director of the Pew Center for the People and the Press. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Still with us is Ron Elving. And joining us now are two former representatives, members of Congress, one from the Democratic side, one from the Republican side. With me here in Studio 3A is David Skaggs, who's now executive director of the Center for Democracy and Citizenship at the Council for Excellence in Government. Thanks very much for coming with us.
Glad to be here.
He represented a district in Colorado for six terms. And joining us also now on the phone is Bill Paxson, who is now the senior advisor at Akin Gump here in Washington, D.C. He used to represent a district in Buffalo, New York, and former chairman of the NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee. And thanks very much for being with us.
It's good to be with you.
What do you two make of this partisan divide as you have look on Congress, from your posts now outside of it? Do you fear for, you know, is the lack of civility worse than it was? Is it palpable, Bill Paxson?
We have a long tradition in the United States of vigorous debate at the federal level, just having finished founding brothers looking at the fights that went on during the opening days of our great nation. It hasn't changed. To some degree, some of the partisan disagreements appear a little more pronounced today because directly preceding them for the time that I was first in Congress in the late 80s and early 90s and long before that, for a generation before, one party, the Democrats, controlled, for example, the House by margins that in some cases were well into the triple digits. So disagreements didn't occur because of the power to just control the agenda and overwhelm the opposition. When we took over, the divide became much narrower, the issues more pronounced, and so there is an appearance of more contentiousness, but the fact is, in the past, the contentiousness was overwhelmed by the strong partisan leading of the Congress, the Democrat control. So I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's good to have vigorous debate on the issues. People feel strongly about the issues. back, I used to hold town meetings, I held 1,100 town meetings, and people used to get up and feel very strongly and passionately about issues, and it's reflected a debate today on the issues here. It's not easy for people, many people who want to see everything sound good, and they don't want to have people shouting at each other. Frankly, again, I think it's exactly what our founding fathers had in mind, and I don't think there's anything wrong with vigorous debate that also flows over to passionate feelings on the important issues of the day.
David Skaggs, get your input on this?
Certainly. First, let me say hi to Bill, who I haven't seen for a while.
It's a pleasure, Dave. Good to be with you.
Let me suggest a couple of other elements. I want to reinforce what Ron said earlier in the hour about the cumulative effect of redistricting and the emphasis of primary elections as a force that pushes both parties to their respective edges more than bringing them to the center, as well as the kind of what's happened to the American family and the sociology of the Congress and its eroded sense of community over the last generation. Very important points. Something that I think hasn't been mentioned and needs to be, especially when we're on NPR, which covers things thoroughly, but stands in stark contrast to the way most of the media covers the Hill, which is that they report on fights, broadly defined, obviously. So there is a kind of perverse incentive on the part of members to up the volume level and the contention level because that's what gets covered, and politicians need coverage. So that's another ingredient in this. I take a little different take overall than Bill. I think the contentiousness of the place has gotten a little bit worse, more than a little bit worse, and it's starting to get in the way of solving problems, and that's a real problem itself.
Yeah, Congressman Paxton, to get things done, don't you have to reach across party lines, across the aisle?
Well, sure, and at the end of the day, there are votes, and issues are decided. They may not be decided in the way they used to be, and I don't want to go back to the way they used to be. Things were done in closed rooms behind closed doors. You know, the days of Wilbur Mills deciding behind closed doors everything virtually that went on in the Congress, I don't think it was healthy for this country. I also don't think it was a healthy time when there were essentially three media outlets, electronic, who devoted, you know, 5 minutes a day to the coverage of media. I think we are a much more small-D democratic nation today because of the proliferation of media opportunities, internet, talk radio, cable news outlets. I believe they have empowered tens of millions of Americans who used to only receive tiny little bits of information from Washington, and today they can receive information like feeding from a fire hose. Now, to the indiscriminate listener or viewer, that's one thing, but most folks at home who are interested can get the information without a filter. It's sometimes raw. It sometimes sounds a little partisan. I think it's good for this country. Frankly, I don't think it's healthy when people are, you know, just simply screaming at each other. But I think on most issues, most days in the Congress, men and women stand up and have a chance to speak out. And there are votes at the end of the day. There are votes, and issues do get decided. They don't get decided behind closed doors. They don't get decided in a way that I think disempowers most of the people in the country.
We're speaking with former representatives Bill Paxton and David Skaggs. Also with us, Ron Elving, NPR's Washington editor. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line. James is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi. I had a couple of quick points I wanted to make. First, actually, let me just throw this in there. The idea that decisions aren't being made behind closed doors, especially by the current administration, I think is laughable. You know, look at the Cheney Energy Committee, at which Enron had a seat at the table, and environmentalists were shut out, and no one in the public can get access to the records of what was said and what went on in those meetings. The idea that decisions are being made.
James, a partisan might draw a parallel to some of the health care meetings that were held by Hillary Clinton after President Clinton was elected. So, you know, this does cut both ways.
Well, actually, and that's my second point, which is I don't think it cuts both ways. There's always an attempt to portray this as, well, there's extreme partisanship on both sides. But if you look at it, Bush, when he was running for president, ran as a moderate. He ran as a centrist. He claimed that he was going to bring the people together and end partisan discord, and he's done anything but that. If you look at the right-wing nature of his judicial nominees and compare them to the people that Clinton was nominating for judicial positions, there's simply no comparison in the political extremism on one side, on the right-wing side, versus the basically moderate nominees that Clinton was coming up with, which were then, of course, blocked by the Republicans to a much greater degree than Bush's nominees are being blocked by the Democrats. I also think the idea that, well, ABC, NBC, and CBS are supposed to balance out talk radio is laughable, because that only makes sense if you believe that ABC, NBC, and CBS are left-wing, which, as someone on the left will quickly tell you, they're not at all.
James, I'm almost sorry I even raised that example earlier, because I knew it would generate a lot of calls, which would sort of get us off the topic. It's a good subject for another day, but I wanted to get some response to your earlier points from the two former representatives that we have with us. So thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
First to you, David Skaggs. Do you think that, as James argues, this is coming from one side more than the other?
Oh, I think whoever is in power is inclined, as Bill would suggest happened when the Democrats controlled the Congress back in our heyday in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, there is a certain tendency to behave in a closed way unless the doors are pried open. I, in fact, think the last part of the Democratic control of the Congress and some of the first part of the Republican control of the Congress saw some middle-of-the-road behavior in that respect. Lately, not intending to be partisan, I think the two conferences recently concluded or about to be concluded on two very big pieces of legislation on Medicare prescription drug benefits and the energy bill were essentially closed to the minority party.
Get a response from Bill Paxton?
Well, they might have been close, but the fact is they had to negotiate those bills, and they had to prepare with senators like Senator Breaux and Senator Baucus, knowing that they were going to need to reach across the aisle to get votes to pass them. When the Democrats had control with 100-plus seat majorities, they could have their dealings behind closed doors and not have to worry at all about ever getting any Republican votes on important issues, because they had the votes to pass it, even if they lost some of the Democrats. So Medicare and energy, which will be being voted on this week, were negotiated knowing that they were going to have to get bipartisan agreement to get those bills passed. I also think that, you know, when you look at the kind of issues that President Bush ran on, he was very clear-cut. He said he was going to try to restore dignity to the White House, and I think he's certainly done that, but he was also going to deal with issues like cutting taxes, a strong defense, other major issues that were not easy to tackle, in many cases issues that had been put off for quite some time. And he made it very clear he was going to try to do so without being contentious, and I don't think he has. I think he has put forward important ideas. He's laid them out there. He's been very vigorous in support of those positions, but not doing so in a way that I think is name-calling or putting it in people's faces. I think it would be hard-pressed to say that was the case. I think it is laying the issue out, letting Congress vigorously debate those issues. At the end of the day, because of the narrowness of the margins in the Congress, there have to be compromises. And
more after a break. 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, and here are a couple of the stories NPR News is following today. John Allen Muhammad has been found guilty of capital murder in the first Washington, D.C. area sniper trial. The penalty phase of the trial gets underway this afternoon. He could be sentenced to death or to life in prison. And the Second Circuit Federal Appeals Court in New York is hearing arguments about whether Jose Padilla can be held as an enemy combatant. Padilla, an American citizen, was arrested in May 2002. Details on both of those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered. Today on Talk of the Nation, we're discussing the increased rancor between Democrats and Republicans in Congress and indeed around the country. Coming up, though, advice to the new governor-elect of California about where he might want to shop, eat, and party in Sacramento. But first, let's get back to our guests. Ron Elving, our NPR's Washington editor, is here with us in Studio 3A, along with former Representative David Skaggs, who represented the 2nd District of Colorado for many years. It's near Denver. On the phone with us is Bill Paxton, a Republican who represented a district near Buffalo, New York, for many years. And we're going to get back to your calls. Let's go right to Jim. And Jim is with us from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I just wanted to say how frustrated I am by the extreme polarization between the two parties. I myself fall in between. To oversimplify, I'm pro-life but anti-death penalty, pro-Second Amendment but strongly pro-environment. So I feel like not welcome anywhere because I have opinions that diverge from both sides.
So given the kind of litmus tests of both parties that we were talking about before, you'd feel that neither of them would have you.
That's right.
All right. David Skaggs, what can we do to help Jim's alienation? Are the parties going to become more tolerant places?
Well, I think they would be if we would get away from the redistricting practices that Ron was talking about at the beginning of the hour, which over time have tended to push both parties' nominees for Congress to the edges of the political spectrum, leaving much less room in the middle to resonate with folks like Jim, and also leaving fewer representatives in the middle of the political spectrum in either party in Washington who are in a position, as Bill put it, at the end of the day, to work out those very necessary compromises.
Hmm. Bill Paxton?
Well, the one thing I can't disagree, wouldn't even want to, on the issue of redistricting. There's no question that the redistricting process is become so precise, and the ability to use census data merged with high-power computers can draw very partisan districts. But that being said, votes on the floor of the House or the Senate will end up deciding legislative initiatives. The margins in the Congress are so much closer today than they've been in a long, long time. In my lifetime, for example, the year I was born was last year Republicans had control, and it's essentially up until 1994 been overwhelmingly dominated the House, certainly by one political party. I think that having the narrower margins does make a difference, and it will ultimately accrue to the benefit of the American people to have a much more transparent Congress, which it is today, much less seniority dominated because of term limits on committee chairs, which is a major, if not the most important reform. I think these are positive steps.
Jim, thanks very much for the call. And are you a registered voter, Jim, by the way?
Yes, I am.
And in which party?
Independent.
That sounds about right for your opinions. Right. Anyway, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let me wind up by asking all three of you to weigh in on the question. Ron Elving was talking earlier about the sort of reciprocal nature of these contests, if you will, these bouts where one party continually feels like it's getting back for something that was done in the past. Is there a way out? Are there grievances that are nursed too long, Bill Paxton?
Well, you know, I think that there are plenty of emotions over the issues of the day. When President Clinton was president, there were many Republicans who got up every morning, you know, unable to eat their breakfast and go to sleep, hard to sleep at night because he was in the White House. And there are clearly many Democratic voters today who feel that way about President Bush. That being said, I go back to the view that a strong two-party system, which, by the way, my view, campaign finance reform threatens, so-called reform threatens, but a strong two-party system where people vigorously debate in an open, transparent way the issues of the day is good for the future of this country. And I know it concerns some voters, get nervous, they want to see everybody sit around and sing kumbaya, but at the end of the day, issues are decided, and there is more transparency and a greater ability of the American people to participate than there was 20 years ago.
I'm going to have a show one day to find out if anybody actually knows the lyrics to that song. But anyway, David Skaggs.
Well, I think it may be a false choice to set up to say either we have vigorous debate or we end up having a kumbaya Congress. I think you can have the disagreement and the vigorous debate, which I agree with Bill is terribly important. But you also need very intentionally to preserve the raw materials, the machinery of compromise, and it gets frayed and worn away by excessive partisanship, which is different from disagreement. And that's an important distinction that I would like to make. The other thing to realize is we've been talking about probably, I don't know, the 20% of the business of the Congress that gets framed along partisan lines. The remainder, 80, 75%, is the normal business of the place, which is much more likely to break along regional lines or other things that make this an interesting country than Republicans versus Democrats. That business keeps going on, and those compromises keep getting made. But the country, rightly, I think, is preoccupied and focused on these headline issues of things like Medicare, drugs, and an energy bill and taxes and so on.
We're going to go into the Medicare and energy bills in much greater detail on this program later in the week. But Ron Elving, in the event that Democrats return to power, will they come back with fresh grievances, settlements that they want? And will Republicans go into the minority armed with new kinds of tactics they hadn't thought about? Is this just going to be another cycle?
That would seem to be the way to bet. What might break that, I would guess, would be a leader with a completely different set of motivations. In other words, somebody who did not come out of the Democratic primary process or the Republican primary process completely primed to run the show for the benefit of his party. A woman, a man who has the commitment to running the federal government policy of the United States with as little respect for regard to the partisan agendas of the R's and D's as possible. That's going to be hard to get with our current system, but it could happen someday, and that, I think, would make a difference.
Thanks to you all very much. That was Ron Elving, NPR's Washington editor. We also heard today from Bill Paxton. We appreciate your time today, sir.
Pleasure.
Bill Paxton, a former congressman from upstate New York, now senior advisor to Akin Gump, a law firm here in Washington, joined us on the phone from his office in Washington, D.C. And former Representative David Skaggs, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
David Skaggs currently serves as executive director of the Center for Democracy and Citizenship at the Council for Excellence in Democracy. He represented a district in Colorado.